Thank you, Mike. I appreciate that. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. A great pleasure to have you all aboard. And with us on this Tuesday morning, it is the 8th of December, and we couldn't be more delighted to have you with us. I was thinking on the car ride down, the best part of the day is just to check in with everybody, see how you're doing, and talk about what's going on in the world. And we get to do that again today. Aren't we lucky? So we welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. And the reason for my excitement is because we have such a great group of people today to talk about, as we do most days. And I am very happy to introduce them all to you. So let's get to it. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you, my friend?
Well, I'm good, Joe. I was out at 4:15. I do my 4 miles then in the pitch black.
Good for you.
Always looking for the bear. Always looking for the bear. If I hear the slightest rustle, I get a little annoyed. And, you know, I bring my umbrella with me, like Wally Cox and Mr. Peepers, a program which I think nobody remembers.
I love
the
Wally.
The Adventures of Hiram Holiday.
Yes. Okay, you got me on that one. I do Mr. Peepers and Wally Cox. Remember
He had another program called, another one called The Adventures of Hiram Holiday, in which he would fight the bad guys with his umbrella.
He also was a regular on Beverly Hillbillies, where he was he would go bird watching with Miss Jane Hathaway. That worked
That's
in the
correct.
Back. Remember that? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They would always have their binoculars and go out. All good stuff. Wally Cox. Fine actor. All right. Well, let us also welcome former Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain. Hello, Mike.
Good morning. I have to tell you that the first time I ever met Alan in person, he said, "Wally Cox." I must have reminded him of Wally Cox. And my favorite Wally Cox was Underdog, wasn't he?
Oh,
Underdog?
That's right. There is no need to fear. Underdog is here. Yes, you're right. Yeah. That is Wallace Maynard Cox. Died at 48 years old. I didn't know he died. Yeah, very young man when he died.
Really?
Very sad. All right. Let us go to 48 years old, but married 3 times. So
you packed a lot in there.
Jane Hathaway, one of the times.
Well, I don't know. Anyway, I think we know more now than we did then. Look, Cohoes City Director of Operations Teresa Bourgeois is on the program. Good morning, Teresa. It's great to hear your voice.
Good morning. Good morning. So delighted to be here. And there's a day for everything. And today is Happy Safe Harbor Day.
Why? What does that mean?
That means it's the day when the electors certify the election in each state. So if they certify by today, the Congress cannot change, and President-elect Joe Biden and Vice President-elect Harris are going to be certified on the 14th. But boy, learn something new all the time. I just learned about Safe Harbor Day.
Now we can get into this. Let me introduce Rosemary. But what they're trying to overturn then is the electors that are going to the Electoral College vote, right? And that's what they're trying to change.
And if each state certifies by today to the Congress, then Congress cannot change.
They cannot do that. Rosemary Armeo is here, investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor. Good morning, Rosemary. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. I'm marveling, Joe, that this is your favorite time of the day.
You know, it really is. I was thinking about it.
That says something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I had a doctor's appointment already this morning. I went in and they handed me a clipboard, and I walked in, and the woman was very curt, and she said, "Will you fill this out?" And I looked and I put my glasses on, and it was 4 or 5 questions for about COVID. And have you gone out of the country? Have you done this? Have you done that? Third question was, have you been in close proximity to someone who has not been wearing a mask regularly? And I looked up at the woman behind the counter, and I said, "I have a question about this." And she said, "Oh, what is it?" And I said, "Question number 3 about people not wearing masks." I said, "Does that include you?" And
ooh. Ooh. Oh, sharper than a serpent's tooth. Oh.
And boy, did that make her mad.
Ooh.
She was in a doctor's office not wearing a mask?
She was in a doctor's office welcoming patients not wearing a mask. Yeah.
Did she put it on?
No. No, well, not to my knowledge. I was ushered out. I was quickly ushered to a different part of the building.
I was worried about the clipboard.
Yeah, well,
You always get a clipboard.
You always get a clipboard. But then when you give the clipboard back, then you just rinse yourself in like it's aftershave lotion with the Purell. So that was my morning. So yes, this is the best time of my day. I am thrilled to talk to all of you. Let's get started. We will go on with what is happening in our world, and as we've already mentioned, there is quite a bit going on. I would like to start. There's a lot of places that we could start, I think, and I would like to go a little bit into the vaccine, which is we're finding out some interesting information. Britain begins mass inoculation campaign with a fully tested vaccine. This is the first, as the Brits call it, jabs that they have. This is the Pfizer vaccine. This becomes interesting too because we also learn that the deal that Pfizer has with the United States, they have told U.S. officials it cannot supply substantial additional vaccine until late June or July. Trump administration officials deny there will be availability issues, but others say problems are possible in the second quarter. Pfizer has told the Trump administration it cannot provide the additional doses because other countries have rushed to buy up most of its supply, according to multiple individuals familiar with the situation. That means the U.S. government may not be able to ramp up as rapidly as it had expected from the 100 million doses of the Pfizer vaccine that it purchased earlier this year, raising questions about whether it can keep its aggressive schedule to vaccinate most Americans by late spring or early summer. Trump administration officials denied there would be availability issues in the second quarter, citing other vaccines in the pipeline. So, Alan, what do you make of this news, which I think can be concerning?
Are Trump and his people lying? Well, let's see. Test number one. Test number one. Are their lips moving? Okay, so of course we know they're lying, here's a guy, a president who has not mentioned COVID in recent times, not since the beginning when he said there would be no COVID in the United States and said it over and over again. But yes, returning to the subject at hand, obviously this needs to be done and a lot of pressure has to be put on them. And if not on them, then it's certainly one will have to ask questions of the Biden administration about how they're going to make up for this. Let's face it, big pharma doesn't have a very good reputation with the American people to begin with, but neither does Trump right now, and that's all I'm going to say.
We should note that this is still a vaccine that has not yet been approved by the FDA in this country. It is expected to be approved by the end of the week. However, analysis of the Pfizer vaccine found, quote, no specific safety concerns that would stand in the way of its authorization of the vaccine for emergency use. Mike Spain.
Yeah, you know, it may be that it's the Trump administration that blew it last June and July by not negotiating larger doses from Pfizer, which they could have done. And now Pfizer has kind of promised those to European countries. But I'll bet you when this is all rolling out, it will be blamed on the Biden administration. Trump will certainly exploit it, saying, we got it there. We had, you know, warp speed. And now they can't handle it. You know, I'm sure they're going to try to reverse it and blame Biden somehow. And Biden probably will step up. You know, there are other companies, Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca, and others will be coming out with theirs in January and February. And this could work out. This could work out in spite of the incompetence of the Trump administration.
Teresa.
Well, I think as Dr. Fauci has said over and over, as has Ron Klain, that there's a difference between developing a vaccine and vaccinations, you know, getting into the arm. And, you know, this is, again, Pence is in charge of this. The COVID task force, the Trump COVID task force, clearly has been a bit in disarray for a while. And this is what happens when you aren't singularly focused on the problem. I think the good news is that you saw the Biden-Harris folks announce their healthcare appointments yesterday.
Yes.
And it's a very impressive group of people, including the folks who are going to lead the COVID-19 response. And so to the extent that, you know, they're on it, they're going to get it back on track. And in the meantime, and you finally see the CDC saying this, you know, the best protection right now that everybody has is wearing a mask. Wear a mask, wear a mask, wear a mask. But this is a pretty serious error.
Rosemary.
Well, okay, so I'm taking a different tack. I have this sneaking suspicion that had they bought all of these doses and spent tons of money on Pfizer back in June, way before we knew that they had anything promising, and certainly they're still not approval yet, we would have been criticizing them for yet another stupid error. And also, if it goes to other people in the world, that still protects us. The entire world has to be inoculated against this disease. So I don't see where it's such a big, horrible thing. It certainly is proof, don't get me wrong, that Trump was not planning anything and this came on unawares. But I don't see the awful consequences of this. Pfizer knowingly didn't take government money because they wanted to negotiate the best deal, and they've done that. That's capitalism, folks, and it isn't going to hurt us. And the Biden administration does have a great team coming on board, and they can spin this in exactly that way.
Will the gentlelady stand for a question?
Yes.
Shoot, Alan.
Well, wait a second. If it's not going to hurt us, I mean, if the sooner people get this vaccine, right, Rosemary, the fewer people will die. So it will hurt us,
well,
I think.
I don't think so, because if we all are inoculated in the United States and the rest of the world is suffering, we still can't go anywhere, do anything. And even if we do get inoculated, there's so many crazies out there who are saying they're not going to get any vaccine, even if it's proven safe. And, you know, I don't know, that's some other infringement on their freedom, like wearing a mask. You still have to wear a mask. You still have to social distance. So it isn't going to change all that much. We're going to go get a shot and then come back and do the same thing we are doing now. And one other thing, we don't know how long this immunization lasts for. Do we have to do this again next year or the year after? I think that there's lots of questions, and if a whole bunch of vaccine is going out into the whole world, that's ultimately a good thing.
It is.
So why are you going to get one? Are you going to get a shot, Rosemary, as soon as you can?
Because I live with a 95-year-old woman. And I still do all the shopping. I go out into the world. I think I have to. I'm going to wait until Fauci says it's okay and Joe Biden gets one. I wouldn't do it if Trump were there, but yes, I'm going to take a risk.
That is so interesting.
I am someone who did not take the shingles shot, which I actually do have a real chance of getting. And I don't get flu shots, but this one is scary. And I'm going to get it.
Rosemary, I agree with you that it's important that this vaccine be used globally. And I think that that's a critical point. The question here is, should the U.S. have purchased its, you know, fair share or whatever, its allotment? But I do think the important thing for people to know is that the Biden team is very, very high level. There's not been a pandemic like this before in our lifetime, but...
Yep.
They have been through, you know, these are people who work through the AIDS crisis and a whole other series of global health situations. And interesting, one of them is also, you know, she has a national security experience as well, understands.
Mm-hmm.
They understand this is a global issue. I think they will be taking a global approach. And so I think that, you know, concerned about what the Trump folks done, but confident that this group of people named yesterday and over the last 2 weeks can help get things back on track.
When it
I agree with all of that.
But going back to what Mike was saying, that we had an opportunity in June and July, and I understand all of the points that you're making, but we had an opportunity in June and July. But at that point, we also, the administration was telling us, and I don't know if they believed it or not, but it seems, and by evidence by this, that they didn't get the extra vaccine because they were still saying that it was going to be over by the end of the month. What I mean, that's a serious miscalculation, isn't it, Mike?
Well, yeah, I mean, it certainly sounds like that. You know, there were some very competent people working in our government, in spite of the Trump administration's lack of leadership. There was some, I mean, the fact that a vaccine, and many vaccines, it appears, you know, more than one, maybe three or four, have been developed so quickly that will go to market within a year is an extraordinary accomplishment. And I think it's because there is such competence in our professional ranks in the FDA and in the Centers for Disease Control and in academia. So it was kind of a victory for the deep state, the scientists, in spite of the Trump administration. But it still took leadership and foresight, and we know that just wasn't there. And this is a consequence. But Rosemary's right. I mean, you know, everybody has to get the vaccine all across the globe, and we shouldn't be hoarding it. We just missed an opportunity to reserve more immediately for us. I'm very confident that there'll be plenty. It just will take a little longer, perhaps, and it's frustrating because we want it, and we want it now.
You know, not to belabor the point, but I want to say again, this is sort of like betting on the stock market. Now, yeah, it looks like a great deal. Too bad we missed out on it. But at the time, Pfizer was not participating in Warp Speed, and it isn't as if the government didn't buy anything. He did buy 100 million doses. He bought half of what they could have, and Pfizer was out of the program and negotiating for a good deal. How do we know they weren't just bargaining? It doesn't seem so horrible to me when I read the stories about it. And I don't like Trump.
All right.
No kidding. But I think one of the things that was so great was when it was at Rosemary, you just said, you know, I'm not taking it while Trump is the president. I wonder how many other people feel that way, because I've heard it several times.
Well, I think, you know, once you'd say, we have to take a break, but again, a lot of people have said, you know, when they see Biden take it, when they see Fauci take it, when they see the former presidents take it, they'll take it. A lot won't, too. We'll get to all of that. We'll take your letters as well. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Teresa Bourgeois, and Rosemary Armeo. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. Beth writes to us and says, since a vaccine will soon be available, you need to start encouraging people to get vaccinated by talking about how much it costs to get sick with COVID-19. The cost of just being intubated in the ICU is a good reason to get the vaccine, even if you have to pay for it.
To say nothing of death.
Yeah, death. Yeah, death's a good...
Even if free, intubation is not pleasant. It's hard to believe that somebody's telling us we have to promote this. No, we don't. We have been promoting it for 8 months now.
My guess is that people will, there'll be a clamor for these vaccinations after people see others getting back into the swing of things. All they'll have to do is see people being able to go places again, and they'll want to get in on it. And don't you think there'll be more than the ex-presidents? There'll be celebrities and people in pop culture will be saying get the jab, and whatever we say here over on this side of the pond,
get the shot.
And people will be, standing in line just eagerly for it. They'll wear stickers like I just voted. I just got my vaccine.
Yeah,
I mean, it'll become a status thing. I'm pretty confident that'll happen once we get through this horrible dark winter.
Do I qualify as a celebrity?
Oh, yes, indeed, Alan. I think if you get the shot,
I would take it in a minute.
I would say of Kardashian caliber. Yeah.
No. Yeah. Oh, boy.
There's a job in public relations, health communication for you guys.
Well, Public policy.
There was an interesting story on one of the news shows last night. I'm sorry, I can't remember which one, but it was about an app that IBM and a couple of others are created to certify that you got the vaccine, and there were people from the baseball, you know, MLB and others are saying you're not going to be allowed in, say, to a sports arena, or you won't be allowed in to a concert, or you won't be allowed in to an airport, whatever, without proving that you have the vaccine. So they're creating these apps to confirm, verify that you've actually had the vaccine.
Cool.
But I do think this is going to require... The vaccination process is going to be long and complicated, and it's going to require some patience because, you know, they have to do this in order of priority,
right. There's some privacy issues, too. I mean, some pushback, but each state has to verify that they're going to keep track of each individual, get their birth date and their name, and keep it in a database so that the government can have that. And some are worried this will discourage people who are undocumented from getting the vaccine and they need to get it in order to help everybody. And that some people will just stay away because they have to give up personal information. And even Governor Cuomo has railed about that.
Listening to this is making me change my mind. It's kind of other big brothery.
Well, it's important. But think about how complicated testing has been. Now, you know, clearly there wasn't leadership from the top, Pence COVID task force and such. But I can't remember the magnitude more of people who need to be vaccinated than have been tested. But it's two times, three times, whatever. And it's going to be a complicated process. So in the meantime, wear a mask and wash your hands.
And let's remember that the President of the United States has said citizens only. How about that one?
Well, by the time this all rolls out, Alan, he'll be an ex-president. And that's a good thing to remember. But to your earlier point, Teresa, under the Supreme Court back in 1905 ruled in a case in Massachusetts that states can require people to get the vaccine. You know, schools in every state, in all 50 states, require kids to have certain vaccinations. And the states apparently have the right to require it. And even employers have the right to require it. So there will need to be some form of verification so that you can... get more than get to a baseball game, but to get into your workplace. Not every employer will, do that, but it'll be an awkward time for some people.
Rick says, hello, panel. The Republicans are stalling the negotiations on COVID relief because of business responsibility, yet they are the same group who want to sue the social media companies like Facebook and Google for not supporting hate speech on their platforms. Hypocrisy much? Asks Rick. We go to John, who takes us to task. I love your show, says John.
But
I must say that not everything is a joke and not every joke is funny. Some of us here are under great stress and we find your laughing to be disingenuous and sometimes depressing. Otherwise, it's a wonderful show.
Stop laughing!
That is obviously not a Wally Cox fan.
No, not a Wally Cox fan. But I will say, look, I think I agree. I think we, like this letter writer, everyone is under a great deal of stress. This whole pandemic is stressful. But if we've learned anything in our lives, it's that humor helps. And wringing your hands, which we are also regularly accused of doing and being doom and gloom. So, you try for the subtle mix and hopefully John will,
come around.
Yeah, come around. And I'm not saying that we if he doesn't find us funny, that's fine. I don't, but laugh at something.
Just think the depth of your knowledge of Wally Cox was very impressive.
No, Alan knows much more about Wally Cox than I do. I just,
Being the oldest in the group.
Yeah,
that is true.
I will. I looked up the death and the marriage thing. Okay, Norman says the panelists who express some concern about Americans' ability to travel abroad unless the whole world gets vaccinated is overlooking the fact that most Americans don't have passports. 42% of Americans hold a passport, and most of them don't go out of the country more than once or twice in their life. On the other hand, it's obviously correct that people all over the world need to be protected and vaccinated. Well, that's true, but the people from all over the world are coming here, right? That's the other issue.
Well, I think it's
and we want their dollars.
Right.
But it's not just whether or not the U.S. folks are traveling abroad. It's that we live in a global society, which I think is what you're saying. And first of all, we should all care for and about each other. But second of all, we live in a global society. People are moving about all the time. And we
should. You globalist, you.
I am. I'm a globalist.
Yeah, well, there's many people who would like us not to be doing that. And if not getting vaccinated keeps people out, I think that they would be in favor of it. Awful, but true.
Well, we're all talking about a return to the normalcy that we crave so much that was pre-COVID. And how long that will take and what needs to happen. And all of this needs to happen before it can even seem like it used to be.
That's right.
And remember, the rest of the world is looking at us, and we're not faring very well globally compared to other countries. So, most people are probably looking at us more concerned about coming here.
Rich says, good morning, panel. I agree with Rosemary. Many vaccines are coming. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine is an additional vaccine based on a known platform, does not require the freezing, and may only be a single shot. Meanwhile, on the flu jabs, Cynthia writes, just like the flu shot, needing it every year is not a reason not to take it, which is a good point. And Drew says, Republicans are okay undermining democracy and holding up the presidential election by supporting Trump and Giuliani and their 40-plus irresponsible, frivolous lawsuits. And Republicans are okay undermining the economy and public health by holding up a COVID relief package because they want to prevent Americans from taking irresponsible corporations to court. This is all mind-blowing. Teresa?
I do think it's stunning that Mitch McConnell that they're not working out some deal on the relief package. And I know that he can't really control his caucus, but now that clearly Biden's in the discussions in the background, and what they need to do is build some coalition between Senate Democrats and the moderate Senate Republicans, such as there are any left. And the fact that they're not making that happen is a real demonstration of McConnell's lack of leadership. He can stop things, but he can't make things happen, and he needs to figure that out in the next few days.
Hey, can I ask you a question, Teresa? If McConnell still, if Georgia doesn't go for two Democrats and McConnell is still in charge, can't he just block things from coming to a vote? I mean, how can even a coalition of moderate Republicans and Democrats in the Senate get things past that obstacle?
Well, he does control the calendar. There are ways to bring bills up. It's very difficult. But you see Biden doing it right now. He is really focused on building this coalition of moderate Republicans, some Republicans what do they call themselves, a solution caucus, that's not quite it, he will still control the calendar, meaning what goes on the floor, but there are ways. So for instance, years ago when we were working on the minimum wage and they were trying to block bringing the minimum wage to the floor, they were able to tag it on as an amendment to a different bill. So there are ways to do it. It's very, very cumbersome. But also, he will have the Biden and their team will have the power of the pulpit, so that they can work on shaping public opinion and create so much pressure that they need to act. But it's going to be challenging legislatively.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about other issues. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Teresa Bourgeois, and Rosemary Armeo, all on the panel this morning. We welcome your letters and notes of encouragement. panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. It's the Roundtable on WAMC 90.3 on your radio dial. We go to a couple of other stories here. Joe Biden to name retired General Lloyd Austin as defense secretary. One of the many selections that the president-elect is making for his cabinet. He has tapped retired General Lloyd Austin III to be secretary of defense. If confirmed, Austin would be the first black Pentagon chief. He rose to become a four-star general in the Army, retired in 2016 as the chief of U.S. Central Command, a role for which he oversaw U.S. military operations across the Middle East for 3 years. During his tenure there, he presided over the U.S.-led military intervention to stop the rise of the Islamic State, which began seizing cities in Iraq in 2014. Alan? What do you
mean? Well, they're going to have to give him an excuse. They're going to have to excuse him, much like they did in the Trump administration, because he was an Army officer, which is sort of foreboding, but not so much anymore. And it'll be interesting to see whether the Republicans are so hypocritical that they'll do it for their guy, but not for a Democratic nominee.
So my understanding, Mike, is...
Do you have any doubt?
What? I'm sorry, what did you say?
I said, ha, do you have any doubt?
No.
That they'll be that hypocritical?
The rule is that the law states that any service member must be out of uniform for at least 7 years before being eligible to serve as defense secretary. The law is meant to ensure civilian control of the military.
Right, and they'll need a waiver, as Alan says. And Jim Mattis, who was... a retired Marine Corps general, but not for more than 7 years, needed that 4 years ago when President Trump nominated him to head the Pentagon. And a lot of Democrats didn't go along with it. I mean, including Kirsten Gillibrand, New York's U.S. Senator, and Elizabeth Warren, and lots of others. And some Democrats are already saying they're not in favor of this. They want to see a true civilian named. So it could be a coalition of Democrats and Republicans that block this.
But it is interesting, right, Mike? It is interesting that Trump is kicking out all the pros, the military people who know what they're doing, and putting in, AKers who will kiss him on the posterior and do what he says.
AKers.
Yeah, only for a few weeks.
Yes, for the remaining times, the 43 days or whatever it is.
Let me tell you, gang, a lot of damage can be done in 43 days.
Absolutely.
And we see it. We see him going now to Pennsylvania and other people saying, overturn the people's will and the people's vote. There's a lot left in this guy, and it's all bad, in my opinion.
Teresa.
Can I say, though,
back to this appointment,
I love every one of these appointments Biden is making, not only because they're people of competence and integrity, but because each one of them annoys the Republicans so deeply. They're women, they're black, they're liberal. It's just delicious. On the other hand, Trump did a ton of damage to our democracy that Biden, I helped to put him in, is supposed to be fixing, and violating this rule about military people being in charge too soon after they leave is part of that. So he's not the best person, I think, for the job. Biden is forced to pick someone else, there's plenty of other people, including Michelle Flournoy, the woman who I think is incredibly qualified. And maybe that's the strategy, that he's appeasing black leaders, saying you got to pay us back. And he does, but not with this appointment. And and he will go to another choice.
Yeah, but this guy's. Go ahead, Teresa. I'm sorry. Go ahead, please.
There's also Jay Johnson. But I think, to the point.
Yes,
he does have a very impressive resume. He's not somebody I was familiar with, but he has a very, very impressive resume. And he did lead CENTCOM. He has direct experience in Afghanistan and Iraq and Syria. And so he does seem to be the right choice for the moment, except for, and it's a big exception, this waiver requirement, which both the Senate and the House have to agree to waive. And as Mike said,
come on, Teresa, I'm going to call baloney on that. So did Mattis have a great record. So did Masters have a great record. And because of that, every general has a great record except for Michael Flynn. And so you could break this rule all the time. That rule is there for a reason. Why was it important up to Trump and now we're going to ignore it? No, we need to go back to the old way.
I'm saying it's a major exception, but I'm saying he does have a tremendous record, but this is a very, significant exception. And I was reading the Military Times to see what they said about this, and they quoted Senator Jack Reed, who, when he voted for the Mattis exception, he said, and I'm quoting, "Waiving the law should happen no more than once in a generation. Therefore, I will not support a waiver for future nominees. Nor will I support any effort to water down or repeal the statute in the future." So whether or not Senator Reid still has that opinion, but it's a big step to waive this, and I don't know if they will.
Slope we're down.
But politically, it's a twofer, right? Think about this. There are many people, African-American caucus basically, demanding that these major jobs go to somebody who has the ability, who is brilliant, and I think this guy is, and it's proven. But he's also a bit of a hawk. He's done the tough job. So Biden is able to do two things at once, and whether that counts for anything, I don't know, but I like it.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if they go to Jay Johnson or not, or if they go to Floor and I, the woman. But I think this is a pretty heavy lift to build the coalition to get this waived. Maybe I'm wrong, but maybe they've
done
the vote
counting.
You
may be wrong.
Maybe they've done the vote counting, but it is a heavy lift.
You may be wrong, unaccustomed as I am to saying that to you, because you're almost always right. But you may be wrong in that there's going to be a lot of support for him. And I doubt that. I think some Republicans who know their jobs are at stake will be very careful about voting against a superb candidate who happens to be African-American from a political standpoint.
Let's see. We go to Bill, who writes, "Longtime listener with a word of encouragement here. I listen to the roundtable most mornings and just wanted you to know that in our house, we really appreciate the laughter. We could all use a few more laughs, especially these days. Keep up the good work." And thanks. And Bill, we thank you very much. Rosemary, head on over to John's house. Let's see. So for years, Eric says, "So for 4 years, this administration has lied to us about everything, yet we are supposed to believe them in the life and death decision of a rush vaccine. Call me skeptical. Exactly. Fortunately, I won't likely have access for some time."
Call me Ishmael.
No, the thing is that Pfizer especially had nothing to do with the government. They didn't take any money. This is what Big Pharm does. We vilify them all a lot, but this is exactly what they do. And if we call them mercenary, well, here it is. The entire world needs two doses of your medicine. Is that not an impetus to get off your butt and start researching the hell out of it? And that is what they did. And so that makes total sense to me. We should glory in that. And yes, I don't trust Trump either, but it isn't just Trump saying this.
Well, didn't Trump blame Pfizer for not getting their news out before the election? I think they did. So, if you're going to be the bad guy, you're going to be the bad guy for everybody all the time.
Well, I think this is an example of Trump was not successful in dismantling and destroying the establishment within the FDA and within the CDC and the partnerships they have with pharmaceutical companies and independent researchers at institutions like colleges and universities and stuff. I mean, he tried to tear down all the institutions, and he just failed here, and evidently, and that's a good thing.
How many? I'll go on to something else. I was just curious. I was looking up how many do we know of the initial cabinet when he was entering office in 2017? Of how many of those initial appointments were confirmed? Who didn't get in?
All got in.
Right. There was no.
They all got in.
Right.
There was no.
I was thinking who didn't stay in with this so many.
No,
of
them, so many didn't stay in, but
right.
but everyone else was confirmed, right?
There were a few whose names he pulled back. The Secretary
right.
of Agriculture, I remember, he pulled back. But I mean, there was such a cast of criminals and grifters in there, and none of them, not one, has been prosecuted.
And names that they floated that didn't make it, you know, that they didn't end up, you know, they did some trial
right.
balloons. But most of us, but remember that they were very, very slow to name people. A lot of them didn't go through the confirmation process, so on and so forth. But.
So, Teresa, you're so brilliant. Let me ask you a question. Do you think there is a more of a chance that when it is a Democratic president nominating Democratic nominees to the cabinet, that he's less likely or she is less likely to get them approved than if it were the other way around with a Republican at the helm?
It depends on who's controlling the Senate and how many votes.
Hmm. Yeah. So let's take the present circumstance.
The present circumstances, I think it's the nominations are going to be challenging. And I think that the reason I'm fascinated by his picks is that he's threading that needle pretty carefully. So one thing he's not doing, which he had a lot of pressure to do, is Biden is not pulling people from the Senate, because that would not make sense.
Nope.
Right? Because you don't want people are saying, oh, why isn't he taking so-and-so and so-and-so from the Senate? Well, because you don't want people to come out of the Senate right now. You need everyone there that you have.
Especially in Democratic states like Massachusetts, Republican governor who appoints,
exactly.
and Vermont, Republican governor who appoints.
Right, exactly. But now in some cases, it's worth challenging the system, but you see it. I mean, the picks so far have really been, you know, interesting and superb, I think.
Many of these people have been vetted already because they've held deputy positions in the
right.
Obama administration.
Have already been.
Even in the
right.
Clinton administration, yeah.
I mean, Becerra, the Attorney General of California for the Health and Human Services job, I would have never thought of that, but the more you think of it, the more interesting and right it is. So, I think his picks so far have been fascinating.
All right, we're going to... Go ahead, Mike.
No, I was just going to say maybe afterwards we can speculate on who will be the Attorney General. Anyway.
Oh, good. All right. Think about that, and we'll get
everybody
to it when we come back.
Everybody write in
and
tell
yeah.
us your picks, right?
That's right.
All right. We will discuss that and much more when we come back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We do welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Joining us this morning, Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Teresa Bourgeois, and Rosemary Armeo, all making up the panel. Alan touched on this in our first hour, but President Trump called the Speaker of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives twice during the past week to make an extraordinary request for help, reversing his loss in the state, reflecting a broadening pressure campaign by the president and his allies to try to subvert the 2020 election result. The calls, confirmed by House Speaker Brian Cutler's office, make Pennsylvania the third state where Trump has directly attempted to overturn a result since he lost the election to former President Joe Biden. He previously reached out to Republicans in Michigan, and on Saturday he pressured Georgia Governor Brian Kemp in a call to try to replace that state's electors. The president's outreach to Pennsylvania's Republican House leader came after his campaign and its allies decisively lost numerous legal challenges in the state, in both state and federal court. Trump has continued to press his baseless claims of widespread voting irregularities, both publicly and privately. That from the Washington Post. Alan.
Well, he's not done. I've been saying this day after day after day. People have poo-pooed it. He'll do whatever he has to. Now, as he gets closer to the end, he'll be more vigorous than before. And, of course, now is the time we have to look and see whether the Republicans who he is appealing to have the guts, the fortitude, the patriotism to say, go to, hey there, hi there, baby in a high chair, go somewhere, but do not but do not do this. This is terrible, and this is the end of our democracy as we know it if we follow your lead on this. That's tough because it may mean they're out of office. This is a time for profiling courage, and ain't going to be easy.
Mike?
Yeah, I mean, it's frightening to me. I mean, what if Trump were to convince just one sympathetic governor, Republican governor, or a legislative leader, you know, just to delay an election so that the certification has to go to the Republican-controlled state legislature, and they do reverse the very clear mandate of the people of that state, it'll just demonstrate how fragile our democracy is and our whole system is. And if this isn't a case for reform or elimination of this old archaic electoral system, I don't know what is.
Teresa?
Well, I think my overview on this is just Trump's fundraising scheme, right? That he doesn't expect that he's going to be the president, but he keeps this up because he's in the process of doing that. He's raised over $200 million, which is just astounding to me. And I think that's bought the silence of the RNC. And I think that, I mean, you heard Cruz, Senator Cruz last night said he'd argue the Pennsylvania case before the Supreme Court, that he's been asked to do that, and he would if it makes it to the court. But this is playing with our democracy in a very serious and unprecedented way. And I, as always, I blame the enablers. It's, you know, Pence and McConnell and the major donors and others who are enabling Trump's behavior. His behavior is abhorrent, but it wouldn't have been sustained for this long had the Senate Republicans, the House Republican leadership not enabled and encouraged him and the high donors. And this is it's a terrible thing to do in any time, but to do it in the midst of a pandemic when hundreds of thousands of Americans have lost their lives, when the economy is teetering because of the pandemic, it's just beyond shameful and it's dangerous.
Rosemary?
Well, I would go beyond what Teresa said. It's not just the enablers in the Senate. It's the enablers in this electorate, the 70-plus million people who still supported him, who are sending in that $200 million, who are letting Cruz get away with saying, yeah, I want to argue. I wish the Supreme Court would take him because I would love to hear him argue. I think he'll look as ridiculous as old farting, dripping Giuliani. And and still, that's not called out by, except for half of the people. Now, the other half are fine with it. And Ron DeSantis in Florida right now is attacking, sending the state police to the home of a scientist who disagreed with the numbers he was giving out on coronavirus, who is lying. Of course, he's a Trumper. So it's people are electing these people, supporting them, even though it's very plain what's going on. We've been talking about it, writing about it, exposing it for 4 years, and nothing has changed. So this goes way beyond McConnell. Goes way beyond Trump either. And it's part of the reason that even despite my kitten and Christmas and the defeat of Donald Trump supposedly at the polls, I still remain really gloomy about the future.
Why do you say supposedly?
Well, Trump would disagree with it. I, of course, think it's crazy to think. When you have Kemp, who himself stole an election, I think, for Tracy Abrams, standing up to Trump, and he had to. Not just federal law, but state law says you cannot, the legislature cannot pull back on the vote of the people. When you have Kemp standing up to Trump, and he looks brave compared to McConnell, we are in trouble.
Yeah, and pointing out the dangers of the physical danger to people in Georgia, in Michigan, all over the country, this rhetoric is putting public servants, their lives in danger. And that video of the police going into the home of the woman from
the
Florida.
The whistleblowers.
Goodness, it was chilling.
Yeah.
And but
it's third world. We're talking Egypt here.
Right. It's not just the Electoral College, which, again, today's Safe Harbor Day. This should be resolved by the end of the day today and certainly by the 14th. But I am very worried and don't quite understand what he's up to about these advisory boards at the Defense Department and to dismiss everybody and put Lewandowski and others in there. Trump
you
is
bet,
not thinking of this on his own. There are other people who are orchestrating this. He wouldn't know enough to think about this, but what are they up to? The FDA just giving Peter Thiel a $44 million contract after, you know, Trump appointed many of Thiel's people to the FDA positions, and now Peter Thiel, his close friend and fundraiser, gets a $44 million contract from the FDA on the way out. There's just so much going on, and that's what we know. What about what we don't know? It's horrifying.
I mean, how much of that do you think is just grab as much as you can, Alan, before you leave the door?
Well, you can, Joe, you can say that, and you'd probably be right. And everybody can say it, they could be right. But I think, you know, I think it was Trump's niece who said, listen, what he says is what he means. You know, it isn't a phony thing. I think this guy faces such terrible repercussions when he gets out of the presidency that he will do almost anything to protect himself right now. And we can talk all about the enablers, but the fact is we have I don't want anybody to take this the wrong way, a charismatic person in the style of Adolf Hitler, where people stand up and they say anything you say is okay with us. And you go back and you see the Nuremberg crowds and you see the people who were applauding him and you see the Trump things. It's right out of the playbook.
Mike?
Yeah, it is frightening. You have to remember that those people who are supporting Trump unequivocally, I mean the masses, not so much the partisan politicians who are sort of gaming this, but rather the masses who are true believers. They're getting their information from an entirely different place than we're getting ours.
Right.
It's not verified. It's not true. But they're getting it. My friend Chris Churchill had a column today that said that Roger Stone was in an interview with Alex Jones and said that North Korea brought in millions of ballots on a ship into ports of Maine and distributed them all over the United States. Maine, rather. Yeah, ports of Maine.
Yeah, great, great column. Great column.
Yeah, and I mean, it just illustrates the alternate universe that is out there, and this is creating a problem that is going to be very, very difficult to fix. And all you can do is pour truth on it, and that's when you have a counter alternative facts, as Kellyanne would say, out there, it just becomes an extraordinary challenge.
All right, let's go to just a few letters, and the one I want to get to, because we were tasked with this by Mike Spain before the break, which was, who would you like to see as Attorney General? And some speculation. So David starts us off and says, I remain impressed with the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo, and think he would be fabulous for Attorney General. Alan, not only commenting on that, but also on who you think would be a good pick.
Well, you know, my favorite is, of course, Deval Patrick. You know, I love the guy. I knew him well when he was governor of Massachusetts, and interviewed him many times, and think he has exactly the kind of stamina that you need in a job like that. But the question remains whether he's mean enough to do that job, because he's an awfully nice man. And really thinks that at this stage of the game, with Biden saying, I'm going to be hands off on the Justice Department, they're going to be their own, you might want to pick somebody who is really tough.
Rosemary.
Well, my dream AG is Hillary Clinton, but that's not going to happen.
That's correct.
I agree that I want someone really mean who will go after Trump, who will go after his former cabinet members who have gotten off scot-free, which continues to annoy me, who will go after breaks in the law. That the guy who right now is the AG for the District of Washington is going after emoluments. I think this is one of the stories we might talk about. He would be a good pick. I know that there are – I want just someone mean, an activist, and someone who's close to Biden who doesn't need to be told by him what is expected, that he will do it on his own. So,
Rosemary, what about Letitia James? Rosemary, what about Letitia James?
I love her. I love her, but I don't want her. It's sort of like not touching anybody in the Senate right now. I really want Letitia James to stay here because she's got that case against the Trump Foundation, and I'm afraid that will suffer a bit if she goes. I would like her to stay here to finish that.
Could be, but, you know, when you, I mean, it's the difference between a pea and a, as in a vegetable, and or a not vegetable, and
a watermelon.
Yes.
And a, yes, thank you, Mike. That's the one.
Wow, Mike saved the day.
Cuomo would be a fabulous.
That's the one, Mike.
Cuomo would be mean and go, and he has no problem going after bullies, and he has a vendetta maybe against Trump. He'd be fun too.
He would. I've asked him 100 times whether he would do it or not. Maybe not 100, but I've asked him a lot of times, and he keeps saying no. But right now, the worm seems to be turning a little bit. Your colleagues, your wonderful friends at the Times Union have a front page story this morning going after him on very little evidence.
But it says he's mean. It does say he's mean in that story, and that is that's a qualification. Maybe he should be the next attorney general. And as much as you have asked him, Alan, when Joe Biden asks him, it may be a different situation.
Yes, he's always said no, but of course, yes, he's always said no. But you don't say yes.
Cuomo, sorry, Alan, I thought you were.
No, no, go ahead.
I just was going to say that Cuomo does have a very loose. A feel for transparency. He does not let records out when he does not want them out. And so that's not someone I normally would be touting for an attorney general, which is a really important job as far as transparency and open government. However, in this case, I think my need for revenge is greater.
Teresa Bourgeois, where is your, on a scale from 1 to 10, your need for revenge and your thoughts on an AG?
I'm, you know, low on the scale of need for revenge. What I think is what we need is to return the attorney general's position to what it had been in the past and really stabilize the department and get it focused again on, because they handle such important matters. I know that sounds trite, but like everything else, I think Sally Yates would be a great pick.
She'd be good.
I doubt that he could convince him to come back, but I think Eric Holder would be a tremendous selection if he could convince him to come back. And I do like Deval Patrick, but I think Sally Yates has been there. She knows the deal. She knows where the lines of right and wrong are. I, you know, people write that she's well liked.
There's even a revenge thing there too. That'd be good.
Oh sure, yeah.
I mean, she's my top pick, but I also think if Eric Holder could be convinced to come back, that would be tremendous. Also,
now for the listeners, listeners who are writing in, the top vote getter, and this certainly fits into the revenge category as well. The winner is Preet Bharara.
Ooh.
But they're talking about him to lead the FBI.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, he was on my list too, but then I read that they're talking about him to lead the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission.
Oh,
and I
like
that
too.
Better.
Oh my gosh.
I like that as a better fit for him.
All right.
Wow.
The question is he making how much? The question is, how much money is he making at CNN?
Oh, probably not that much.
They pay well.
Yeah. When you're on,
I feel like he's wasted the last 4 years, like playing with his media stuff.
Yeah, no,
and blogging.
You make a point.
He's way too important for that.
But
yeah,
someone with his focus in the Securities and Exchange Commission, that would be quite something.
That would be fascinating.
Yeah.
Oh, that's exciting.
I thought that was an exciting rumor.
You know, Biden
of course, that's
and
what
Harris
it is.
Have made big promises that they need to keep about minorities, too. So, I mean, that's not something that we're weighing into this measure, although Preet Bharara and Eric Holder fit both of those things, too. They're supremely qualified and they're minority candidates, which, I want to say I love seeing the picks. It just because they not only are very good and they have lots of integrity, which our last cabinet members did not, but they just annoy the Republicans.
And by the way, Deval Patrick does
Deval Patrick does both also.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, you're right. You're right. Sorry, didn't mean to leave him out.
But Deval Patrick might actually get approved. A lot of the Sally Yates, she'd have trouble getting through. I think Holder would have trouble getting through because, if you know, unless things change in Georgia, and we can certainly talk about that, but, you know, it's going to be hard to get a lot of these more controversial people through.
Yeah, if I were those Republicans, Mike, I would certainly approve Deval Patrick. Because he happens to be nice. And the last thing.
Right. And that may be lacking the qualification that a good independent attorney general needs. But I'm not sure of that. But
I have not noticed that McConnell cares about nice.
Right.
Right.
But also sometimes it's worth the fight to force the vote on it, on a nominee. You know, we did that with there was a surgeon general when I was working on nominations. There were a couple of go rounds on surgeon general picks. And so in any case, I do think Sally Yates, I mean, there has Janet Reno, you know, there has been a woman leading the mm-hmm. Justice Department, but the I do department. Think she'd be a great pick. Although I do like Hillary Clinton.
Come on. But isn't Sally Yates a stick in their eye, the Republicans' eyes?
Because I think so, yeah. I mean, she was fired 10 days.
Highly qualified. And yeah.
No, I agree. I agree. I like her. But, of course, if you're trying to get people through, and an AG appointment is going to be extremely important here, you know, the tarmac and Bill Clinton and all of the rest of that stuff, why would you court that?
Yeah, another
but
name that comes up.
In every one of his appointments.
What'd you say?
Well,
the tarmac.
You can
say that about every one of his appointments.
No, but I'm talking about the Clinton. Okay, all right.
All right. Dylan says, we just have about 5 minutes before our bottom of the hour break, so let me get in as many letters as I can. Dylan says, as Trump continues to declare victory and push his own interests forward, a practical lesson comes from Italy in this century. Biden-Harris need to know why and how Berlusconi, the original Trump, was able to maintain populist and conservative control. He kept the party in line behind him, and the Italian Democrats failed to make old norms into new anti-corporation corruption laws, and the beast was able to return to power.
When we were in Italy, and there were these people on the train, and we were sitting there talking to them, every time Berlusconi's name came up, they started to laugh. They patted their thighs and they laughed as if this is not something to do with Donald Trump, right? I mean, there was a difference. They thought he was a jerk, all right, but they didn't see him as being that dangerous, I believe.
Oh, I think Berlusconi is the closest model we have seen to Trump. He had a vast media empire which is parallel to Trump's media control. He had huge control over the party, a different kind of legislature where it was much easier for him to get them to pass self-aggrandizing and self-protective measures. That's a bit harder even in the McConnell Senate, but that was part of it. And he had, you know, a horrible womanizer and pig, and people were vastly entertained by him. All of that, the charisma of Berlusconi is so similar to Trump.
But now you see,
I mean, he, and also the effect after he left, it took so long for Italy to try to come back from that, to restore themselves as, you know, serious people. I'm not sure that they have yet, but the effects of Berlusconi lasted for a long time.
Well, we may not agree on that, because I think what it comes down to is who the person is. I can tell you that there is, in my sense of it, Berlusconi is a product of an Italian system, which is very different from the American system of elections.
Let's see. How much? 2 minutes? Okay. General Austin's main experience is leading U.S. troops in the Middle East, where we've pretty much lost in every front and are now pulling our troops out of. Meanwhile, we're facing an empowered Russia in Europe and China in the Far East, two areas he has no experience with other than breaking a racial ceiling. Why is General Austin such a good choice? Anyone want that one? Hearing no one, we go to Greg. Although you haven't discussed Giuliani directly this morning on the panel, you have, of course, been discussing the COVID crisis. Anyway, have you noticed that how all these rich, powerful, and Republican politicians who contradicted the disease through their own reckless actions seem to enter the hospital almost immediately after diagnosis and receive the best and most aggressive treatment available? So far, they've all been had pretty good outcomes. Even Rudy has announced that he's doing great. Good for him. But if I get sick, can I demand Trump-like treatment or Christie care?
On the money.
No.
Kathleen says, do people who have had COVID need to get vaccinated, or they will be, or will they be assumed to be immune? Will they go to the back of the line at least?
The CDC says that they should get vaccinated because they do not know how long they will be immune before they're, you know, before that wears off, and that being vaccinated is the safest, best recommendation, according to the CDC.
Robert says, as much as I'm looking forward to the vaccine, we still need to remember that it is only 3 weeks after the second dose that we can get you that we can let your guard down with face masks and I think they're saying that even with the vaccine, you still have to, you can't let your guard down. I think that's the point of that letter. There's words missing, but I'm going to go with that. Exactly. Let's see. We are
out
of
time.
Yes, wear a mask. We are going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation right after this. Thirty-four minutes past the hour on this Tuesday, the 8th of December. Last call in this tavern of fun we call the Roundtable Panel, and we welcome your letters. Let us go on to other subjects if we can. We want to talk a little bit about Georgia. And so the Republicans are making clear their strategy is to attack Warnock for the crucial Senate runoffs. The GOP is focusing its attacks on the Reverend Raphael Warnock, portraying him as a radical, a claim he has rejected, but one that worked for Republicans in down-ballot races last month. There was, of course, the debate over the weekend. So, Alan, what do you think?
I think it could be a good strategy among bigots, but it could also be a bad strategy, because the one thing that obviously helped defeat Trump in Georgia was the African-American vote. And if you alienate that vote, and if you give them a reason for turning out in a way that you might not have before, you know, we know that there was a hell of a turnout, and that could really hurt them. You know, I'm still staying with the Rosemary Allen skepticism about the Democrats winning in this, but there are some encouraging signs.
Yes. Teresa.
Well, I think that the, you know, I mean, what I think is simplistic. It's all about turnout. And I was concerned to read just a little while ago that they are reducing the number of early voting sites in some of the key districts in the counties in Georgia. So that's something that's going to have to be watched very, very, very carefully. But I think Warnock knew from the beginning that they were going to take this approach, and he produced some ads to try to inoculate himself against that. But really, it's just a question of they have put together Stacey Abrams under her extraordinary leadership, and others have put together a pretty robust get-out-the-vote operation, and we'll see if it works. Hopefully it will.
Rosemary,
it'll be interesting to see whether Biden comes in. You know, there was a lot of talk about his actually doing a closer to the event, you know, show up. If they think, and I know they've already sent Obama, so if they think they can, that'll do it. They'll do it.
Well, I'm concerned that in the general election this year, much headway was made with promoting the idea that Joe Biden is a liberal radical, a socialist in the order of Fidel Castro, and that actually won votes for Trump. That ridiculous idea went through. And of course, they added to that, they being the Republicans, added to that craziness with the idea that Biden wouldn't really run things. It would be Harris. And oh my God, she's a black woman from California. How bad can you be? And now they're doing the same thing to a candidate who is really, not only is he good in his own right, but he's running against that evil, slender Cruella de Vil woman who cruelly, you know, who skeptically bet on the health of people and, you know, got rich off of it. She made stock on it. She should be so easy to beat, and yet she won't be because she's a skinny blonde woman running against a black man in Georgia. And I'm sorry, I think it gets down to race. I think that turnout is going to be large. There's a lot of interest in this. Both sides are drumming it up. I'm happy every time one of the Trump operatives says it's a rigged election, don't bother to vote, because I hope they listen to that. But I don't think they will. I think it's really plain what's at stake, and Georgians are going to come out in force.
But if in a place like Cobb County, you know, they early voting locations are going to drop from 11 to 5, and particularly in areas where large concentrations of blacks and Latino voters, right? If that stuff
that's
goes
not
going
to help.
That's going to be a problem. And
that's disgusting.
But
that's really disgusting.
Turnout is the key. Turnout.
Yeah, I mean, didn't that help in Texas when they shut down where you could return the ballot box? The drop-offs dropped, and we saw Texas stay right in the red line again. So, yeah, I mean, Georgia's pretty practiced in voter suppression.
Right.
And Stacey Abrams aside, I think she's wonderful. She'd be a good attorney general, too, but I want her to keep working in Georgia. To her aside, I think it's a really uphill battle on this. The stakes are high. The attention is all on Georgia. And
but
it's a race thing.
He is such a – Warnock is such a good candidate. I mean, he would be an extraordinary senator.
Yeah.
The more I listen to him, the more amazed I am at what a contribution, what an important voice he would be in the Senate.
Yeah.
And that church is so important that he's been leading, you know, Martin Luther King and everything else. I mean, if there was ever a perfect person to try to move the black vote out, he certainly is that one.
And to unify, to, you know, bring everybody out who wants to say, let's, you know, let's all get along, let's work together. We have a lot of very significant challenges. You know, there was such a stark difference, and maybe her approach worked better than him, but in that debate that I listened to, Reverend Warnock was really talking about the issues and talking, you know, about people's problems. And, you know, her whole focus, she had her talking points down, was attacking him and nothing on substance, nothing about the challenges, which are right now, as we all know, extraordinary. And he'd be a fabulous voice in the Senate.
You bet.
You know, it's clearly an uphill battle for the Democrats here. But if the Republicans, it's theirs to lose. And if they go too heavy, too strong, I think if Trump comes back in and he continues to attack the governor and state election officials, and they try to continue to say the race was stolen, and there's more infighting in the Republican Party, it's just going to discourage turnout. At the same time, I don't know if Biden going down there is necessarily a good idea. I think they'll be taking, you know, the temperature of everything before that happens. If it looks like the Georgia people are going to decide and they're not going to be told what to do from outside, and the turnout gets, you know, there's motivation on the part of the Democrats to come back out, it could go either way.
Hmm.
There was an interesting quote from Loeffler. She says, quote, "What's at stake here in this election is the American dream. This is an attack on every single Georgian who gets up every day to work hard to provide a better life for their family." And, I mean, to me, that's exactly the reason to vote for Reverend Warnock.
I know. And what does she know? She's a gazillionaire, right?
And the wife of the head of New York Stock Exchange.
Yeah. And I don't think the fact that she's wealthy is the issue.
Hold on. Go ahead.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. That's all right. I know. It's all very exciting. I know that.
She's not that what? Did I hear somebody say she's not that?
Everything she was saying, that whole thing that Teresa just quoted about your American way of life is code for blacks. Blacks are taking
yes,
over.
Absolutely.
Radical Democrats
yeah. oh,
are taking
oh, yes.
over. It's horrible. It's nothing. Not
it's
only
dog
is it untrue, it's racist.
But I think when she was on, Barbie stocks went up.
But, I mean, I don't think the issue is her wealth. I think the issue is the what is she focused on? What are her votes? What has she talked about? You know, what does she stand for? Has she been pushing for to get a relief package passed? No, she hasn't. You know, they just put substance behind her words that really matter, and that's not what she's done. I mean, I understand the coded racial language, but I wanted to take it as a more favorable thing that he, Warnock, has devoted his life to try to work hard every day to make other people's lives better, and that's what we need. And you know,
that's all lovely and idealistic, and it is about her worth, her wealth, Teresa. She invested money in stocks to enrich herself because she knew how bad COVID was. She lied, and that alone should disqualify her. But
well, no.
Should I and would I?
I'm sorry. I agree with you on that. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm not making myself clear. I think that there are very wealthy people who do great things in the world, and
it's not strictly about her about wealth. It's about how she got her money.
Her actions, right.
Well, it's interesting that Representative Clyburn has come out forcefully accusing Lindsey Graham of misbehavior. And he, of course, is the guy who probably turned South Carolina around for Joe Biden and now going after Lindsey Graham, who deserves it, of course. And we'll see whether that brings anything.
Yeah, Alan, isn't it interesting Lindsey Graham from South Carolina meddling in the Georgia election and then now Cruz from Texas going in and meddling in the Pennsylvania election? I mean,
same old, same old.
Yeah.
Yes, but
how,
the Republicans.
How are they meddling? They're campaigning. Hasn't that always gone on?
Well,
it's not.
Yeah, but they are internal
when
cases.
Up, when Lindsey Graham called up and wanted to change the election result, but supporting somebody,
different.
I don't see where that's a problem. Yeah.
Well, what's different, certainly, you always have surrogates come in, and it's not at all unusual for elected officials to come into a different state and support the candidate. The difference is Lindsey Graham allegedly calling and trying to get them to change votes, or Cruz,
yeah,
you know,
that.
Arguing before the Supreme Court in a case that clearly shouldn't be brought because it's arguably anti-democracy, right?
Right.
I don't mean meddling.
Well,
the president calling up.
All right, we're just about out of time.
Oh, okay.
Well, I'm sorry.
Republicans in those states are defending against these outsiders coming in. So,
well, you're all a feisty panel this morning. That was fun. Thank you very much for being with us. We greatly appreciate it, as always. Alan Chartok, thank you very much.
And thank you, Joe.
Mike and Teresa and Rosemary, wonderful to have you aboard. We'll talk soon,
thank
and we'll
you.
Be right back after this.